Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome along to Writer's Routine. This is the podcast where we talk through the working day of an author to see how an initial story idea was taken through planning, plotting, and then finally, fingers crossed, publication. And now today we're chatting to Keith Anthony. His debut novel, Times and Places, it's out right now in paperback, and as a genre, it's quite tough to define. So we'll try and do that today during the episode. Also, we chat about the silent retreat that gave him the idea that he needed to sit down and write, whether his debut lived up to the expectations that he had in his head, and also why a cruise with his mum gave him the spark of a story idea that he needed to finally get started.
I went on a cruise, actually, with my mum. I took my mum on a cruise, and I thought before we went, Keith, you've been wanting to write a book for ages. A cruise ship could be a really good setting. People trapped on a ship. Visiting exotic places as well, lots about the natural world. And I took with me a notebook on the cruise and just tried to note down, you know, little things that I saw. So I think I knew I was going to write a book before I went on that holiday. That was late 2015. And then, sure enough, I think maybe even on the 1st of January 2016, I started writing.
So stick around. That is all on the way on this week's Writer's Routine. Hello, hello. Yes, I know, it's been a while, isn't it? If you've never listened to us before, thank you so much for taking a chance and giving Writer's Routine a download. This is the podcast for creative types, where we unpack the way writers get things done. And I hope that listening to their working day inspires you to try and streamline your own. And if you've been with us since the beginning, if you've listened to most of our episodes so far, thank you so much for coming back, because I know it's been a little while. You see, I've been in Edinburgh for the last month or so. And it's strange, you know, I thought that being at the world's biggest arts festival would give me plenty of chances to sit down over a coffee and chat to authors and playwrights in abundance. But Edinburgh, have you been? You know this. It kind of absorbs you, really. Time stands still, but it also moves at a rate of knots. Things get out of hand. You don't really understand what day it is, what time it is, and you lose track of everything that you would put in the diary to do. So, long and the short of it is I didn't manage to chat to anyone, but it's fine. Thanks for coming back after a summer off. Now, the release dates of the next few episodes, by the way, might be a little bit scattergun as we get back to normal, as we ease ourselves back into working day after I've taken time off over the summer. I'll let you know what's happening on Twitter, though, so do give us a follow. It's Writers Pod over there, and on Instagram, you can find us at Writers Routine. The good news is we've got some big authors in the pipeline that will hopefully be on the show soon. Massive names. Ian Rankin, Cecilia Ahern, both incredibly successful, and hopefully I can bring them to you in the next few weeks or so, so make sure you subscribe to the podcast so it automatically downloads to your feed. Now, in the meantime, if you've got a second while we're talking about downloads and iTunes, I'd love for you to let other people know how much you're enjoying the show. You can do that very easily as a review over on the iTunes podcast store. So if you're finding anything about these shows useful, find Writer's Routine there. Leave us a 5-star review if you can, if you think it's worthy of that, because it really helps us with the chart and it gives us more chance of getting these massive named authors on the show to talk to you. Today, we've got the debut novelist, Keith Anthony, bringing us his writer's routine just off the quiet fields of rural Buckinghamshire. Upstairs in a terrace house, you'll find Keith frantically bashing away at a laptop, getting his story down. And it's taken him some years to finally write one. He's always wanted to get it done, and we'll find out what finally spurred him on to do the work in just a second in the chat. Now, the story is called Times and Places. I've already mentioned earlier on that as a genre, the tale was quite hard to pin down because it's mystical, it's adventurous, it's literary, it's observational. So we chat about this very issue and how he resolved that in his own mind and on the bookshelf in this episode. Now, the story, it's about a man called Fergus, who 10 years after his daughter's death, he finds himself on a cruise with his wife, and everything comes to a head. It reaches boiling point. We learn about his story, their story, other people's story, and the simmering tension that comes with being locked on basically a floating hotel for a week, and what it feels like to everyone. So there's a lot going on in this novel, Times and Places, and you can find out how Keith managed to think it through, then get it down on paper in just a sec. Stick around. Also, we'll get a top writing tip from a creative writing tutor who's now a memoir prompter. That's on the way in a little bit too. First, let's get into it then. Today's episode with Keith Anthony, the author of Times and Places. And we start, as always, by finding out where he sits down to write.
Well, I sit down in my front room, upstairs front room, so it's kind of my spare room, but it's a writing room stroke music room while I'm there. So I've got a window to my right. I like to work on my desktop computer, so that's in front of me. I'm also a rather poor amateur guitar player, so I've got my guitars to my right as well, which can sometimes be a little bit of a distraction when you're struggling with the writing, but I try to be a little bit disciplined.
Have you got any windows in the room?
Yeah, I've got windows, so my windows look out just on neighbours. I have a much better view from the back. I have nice greenery behind me. To the front, not quite so interesting. It's neighbours and a road, but I guess that's good in terms of the writing and that is less distracting.
You called it writing/music room.
Yeah.
When you got the house, did you always imagine that you would write in this specific place?
Yes. So I definitely, it's not a big house, it's just a small terraced house. It's very nice though, I'm very happy with it. But what I wanted to do is make sure I had a room where I could fit a nice desk, I could be comfortable, it could be a relaxed setting. And so that's very much what I've got there. And I'm actually find, I know we'll come on to how I write a bit later, but I actually find that I am able to focus there. So when I'm writing, usually for me, it's the motivation of starting writing. And the same is actually true when I'm practicing the guitar. Once you get going, I lose myself in the time. And that's exactly what I was thinking about when I got the house. This room is perfect for that. I can just focus on my writing, not too many distractions.
So speaking of the distractions, aside from the guitar that you might find in the room, give us a quick tour of the walls. So what have you got? Have you got shelves lined with books? Have you got some paintings up to give you inspiration?
Yeah, I've got some paintings up. They're paintings, very nice ones actually, of Central America. I'm lucky to have travelled quite a bit, but never there. I'd love to go there. I speak a little bit of Spanish, so that would be good. But yeah, so there's the paintings around the wall. There's my guitars to my right, as I say, and then a sofa behind me, which stretches to a sofa bed for when I have guests. So small, but nice.
So the program is called Writer's Routine.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about yours, the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed on a day where you're sat down to write.
Okay, so, I mean, it does depend what sort of day it is, because I have a full-time job. It would be fantastic to be a full-time writer, but I'm definitely not that. So on a day when I'm going to be writing, it would usually be a weekend or a day off. So I'd usually probably get up, and I'd probably actually start still in my PJs, probably, and I'd sit down and
what
start.
Time are we talking?
I actually, as a teenager, I was terrible. If you dragged me out of bed at 10 o'clock, you knew you were doing well. Now I seem to wake up quite early. So, you know, it could be anything. It could even be 6 o'clock or it could be 7 o'clock. I would say probably on average it was about 7:30, something like that. But that would mean I could get started, feel I got cracking with a certain amount of my writing and maybe do an hour and a half or something like that and then break off.
So if you wake up at, say, 7 o'clock on a Saturday, how quickly will you be sat down in your chair upstairs in the room bashing away?
I would say quite quickly. I'd probably have a bit of a wash, try to sort of freshen myself up a bit, but then I'd probably get going 15 minutes later, something like that, and do a little bit of writing for maybe an hour and a half or so, and then have a break for breakfast and maybe to get, you know, myself properly ready for the day.
What happens after the breakfast for the rest of the day then?
Well, then I think that's when what tends to happen is it depends, of course, what stage of the book I'm at. But in the earlier days of writing the book, I then sit down at the keyboard and I just start writing. I'm a believer in just get it down. So I start writing and don't worry too much about the quality. Obviously, I'm trying to write nicely, but I don't worry too much about the quality. And it's during that sort of period that I tend to really lose myself. So, you know, hours can go by. I don't find I struggle too much. I mean, I spoke about distractions, and those happen at a different stage, really, of writing, which is where you're trying to polish it up and you've got a sentence in front of you which you're really struggling with, and you can spend hours just over a sentence polishing it up at a later stage of writing. But at the stage where you're just writing it and getting it down, I find that the time disappears. And so it's not a problem in terms of spending time writing. It's more of a problem in terms of, whoops, that's the time I should have been there doing that.
And how much do you aim to get written? So if you find it hard to stop yourself writing, what constitutes a good day for you?
Well, I would say, I mean, my chapters in my book are probably on average about 3,000 words, something like that. So I think at that initial writing stage, I probably wouldn't try to do more than a chapter, actually. So it would be 3,000 words, which may not seem much to some people, but for me, you know, you're thinking about it, you're writing, that would be a good day. I think I had some days where I did more, perhaps up to 5,000, something like that. Probably on average, a good day would be to have written a full chapter, which would be about 3,000 words.
And this is your debut novel?
Yeah, it is, very much so, yeah.
Have you discovered any quirks, little intricacies along the way that help you work better, that keep you in that writing zone so you can crack through the day?
To be honest, not really. The structure of my book was very helpful for me in terms of writing, because I have a structure where the chapters alternate. I know that's quite a popular style these days. So there's the odd number chapters are Fergus and Sylvie, who are a late middle-aged couple, and they go on a cruise. So it's about the cruise and what happens to them on the cruise. And then the chapters in between that are other sort of related parts of their life. So they've lost their daughter, so I go back to their daughter's life and her romance with her boyfriend, who's called Jones. So I was able to write about that. I was able to write about their relations, Fergus and Sylvie's relationship at home. I was able to write about the detective who's interviewing their daughter's death, and I was able to write about the woman who believes herself responsible for the death. And all of that meant I had a nice lot of variety, so I could be writing about the cruise one day, and then the next day I'll be writing like a detective story, and it's a detective or the person who thinks she's responsible for the death and her worries and what's going on in her mind. What I try to do is write one which is observational humour. So I'm looking at people, looking at scenarios that can occur from an observational humour point of view, but also what's going on in their mind. So for Fergus, who's the main character, who's about 60 years old, he lost his only child, Justine, 10 years previously. He's really struggled to get to grips with that, and that's brought him to a place where he's struggling with anxieties and with his mental health. The cruise is aimed to help him perhaps have a bit of peace and quiet. What happens during the cruise, however, is that on a cruise ship, you're stuck with people. So there are some people on the cruise ship that he's really drawn to and he's fascinated with, who remind him perhaps a little bit of his daughter. And so he becomes a little bit obsessed in that way. But there's also people on the cruise ships and things on the cruise ship that drive him crazy, and which so therefore actually increase his anxieties. And then there's a series of events that occur also which add on top of that. So in fact, what happens is you have this crescendo of tension from the book. So it's not that, well, there are doddery people on board the ship. That's part of what he sees, and he has some reflections on that. But in terms of him, it's about this big build-up of tension and how that resolves, for better or worse, at the end of the story. And also, the connections between what happens on the cruise ship and the alternating chapters which have explored other parts of his life. And what I was trying to do, I don't know how familiar you are with Jonathan Coe, but he's one of my favourite authors, and he wrote a book called Water Carve Up. It's kind of observational humour with lots of pathos. I like pathos as well. And even some gothic horror in there. So his imagination starts to go a little bit wild, a little bit crazy. So there's some even some gothic horror in there. Lots about the natural world. I love the natural world, so I can talk a little bit about that. But lots about the natural world too. So you have all these different strands. But what I try to do, and all these different stories on the cruise and outside the cruise, and I try to do what I think Jonathan Coe does, which is to have lots of different strands, but them all to come up neatly together at the end in quite a surprising way. So that was the aim. I think he's more political probably with his novels, and I'm a bit more spiritual probably. So that's probably the difference. And also, obviously, he's hugely successful. But I was kind of thinking about his style as I wrote it.
Let's talk about that aim a little bit more. Now you've brought it up. Because as your debut, I was wondering what you set out to write. I've spoken to a lot of crime authors on the show. And with a crime story, you kind of know what you're getting. Mm-hmm. You can sit down in front of your laptop and you think, right, I know that this needs to be here. Yeah. A, B, C, it all needs to add up to a nice resolved D. How about you, though? When you sat down to write Times and Places, what did you think it was going to be? What was your main intention for the novel?
Well, my main intention for the novel was for it to be observational, but in terms of the cruise. So the cruise, I just felt, was a really fascinating environment to have characters. And I have got, I think, some quite strong sort of sub-characters who crop up from time to time. So I wanted that, but I also wanted it to be a slightly spiritual novel. So, and when I say spiritual, I don't mean in a formal sort of religious way, although there are aspects of that, because Fergus explores his faith in the book. And that kind of stems back from the time that I myself went on a silent retreat. So I wanted to go on a silent retreat to experience that. And so I wanted to try to capture some of that in a reflection, with perhaps some less formal spiritual musings that people have. We are only here for a short time. What happens next? What's the meaning of if you lose a child? You know, fortunately, that hasn't happened to me. But if you lose a child, even an adult child, Justine, his daughter was 24. You know, what does that mean? Why did that happen? How do you come to terms with that? And you know, the sort of story is all, as well as being observational, it's about being observational of Fergus and how gradually, through some pretty tense and torrid times, he actually comes to terms with all of these things. Obviously, he's still lost his daughter, but there's ways that he learns to live with that.
Let's just handbrake book chat for a sec.
Yeah.
Tell me about the silent retreat very quickly.
Okay, so I saw actually a TV programme about it, and some people went on a silent retreat, and I thought, oh, that sounds really quite interesting. I think, you know, I have my own beliefs, but I struggle with loud faith. I struggle with people who have absolute certainty. For me, it's a much more inquiring sort of business. And so I saw this TV programme and I thought, oh, I wouldn't mind just trying that. And so I took myself off to a place called St Bino's, which is in North Wales, and had a week there. And it was really interesting because you take yourself completely away from the modern world. I was worried, would I struggle not talking to people for a week? But actually, it becomes perfectly normal, perfectly relaxed, and you begin to notice things that you wouldn't notice probably in everyday life.
Is there a bedding in pit period where maybe with the first hour or so of the first day, you start saying fewer words, or is it step foot through the door and that's it, no words can be spoken?
So what happened there was... you go there and actually you have the first meal as a talking meal, and then you have a kind of introduction from the staff who break you into it. I actually found that the most stressful bit of the whole thing, because for the first meal as a talking meal, and you're wondering what other sort of people are going to be there. What am I going to say to them? Are they all going to be, you know, deeply spiritual types? Am I going to be out of my depth? So I found that actually quite the most stressful part. Thereafter, I settled into it really quickly, but I think that probably it's not for everybody, that's for sure, and for other people they probably struggle and then settle into it more slowly. But for me, I found it very relaxed, and I mean, we all have pretty busy lives, I'm sure you do, I do with my work as well. It's just nice to step out of it for a little while.
And what was it like stepping back into loud society when you'd finished after a week?
Well, it's... you kind of know it's gonna happen. So you're on this silent retreat. You're noticing things that you didn't notice before. Your mind is quietening. You're noticing actually there's a lot of junk there, which you're kind of trying to actually push out, or at least notice it and be aware of it. But you kind of think, I'm in this sort of moment of quite intense awareness. But tomorrow I'm going to be driving back down the M6 back home. And I'm not going to be able to keep hold of it. And surprise, surprise, you can't keep hold of it. Not all of it, but you can remember it and you can try to learn some lessons from it as well. And so I do a lot of mindfulness meditation as well, which is the same sort of thing, just sitting there, noticing your breath, breathing, learning to relax. And I've put a lot of that into the book as well. So Fergus does these things and I'm able to transpose some of the things I experienced and I felt onto Fergus. I'd always wanted to write a book, that's for sure. I did the silent retreat. I did find that a very reflective experience. So I thought, maybe I can put some of the spiritual ideas, and that's spiritual with a small s, it's, you know, mystical ideas of some of the thinking I'd had on that retreat. Maybe I could put some of that into a book. And then I went on a cruise, actually, with my mum. I took my mum on a cruise. And I thought, before we went, Keith, you've been wanting to write a book for ages. A cruise ship could be a really good setting. People trapped on a ship, visiting exotic places as well. Lots about the natural world. So I thought, right, I am going to write a book when I come back from the cruise. And I took with me a notebook on the cruise and just tried to note down, you know, little things that I saw, perhaps characters I saw. There's no one in the book that's actually repeated in the book, but you can draw on behaviours that you saw and put them into characters in the novel. So I think I knew I was going to write a book before I went on that holiday. And then that was late 2015. And then sure enough, I think maybe even on the 1st of January 2016, I started writing. And that process, the actual writing of the first draft took about 6 months.
So how did you expand on it then? You come back from your cruise, you've got a notebook full of observations, ideas, things about what people do.
Yeah.
How are you developing that into a story that sat here in front of me?
Well, so, I mean, the cruise ship is really the setting. And it's for me, it was a great setting, but you still had to have the story behind it. And so the story was this guy who has lost his daughter 10 years previously. And then the cruise was to allow me really to just build up that tension and to have scenarios which occurred on the cruise, which build up that tension until eventually it breaks and it cracks. So the cruise allowed me to do that, but I always knew that was going to be the drive, the thrust of the story, whilst using these other chapters to explore some other things that I thought were important. If you thought you'd killed someone, okay, albeit accidentally, how would that make you feel? Would you hand yourself in? If you handed yourself in and you've got children, what would that mean for your children? So all those questions, someone who's an ordinary person and something happens to them which makes them think, rightly or wrongly, that they're a killer, you know, what would that do to you psychologically? Similarly, the investigating police officer, she's grown up in London, in central London, led a very urban life with the Metropolitan Police, and she gets to go out to the Chilterns where Fergus and Sylvie live. She's investigating because their daughter was killed in London. And then there's a juxtaposition between her world, which is a very urban world where she sees lots of really, really gritty things, and a world which she sees as idyllic. Whether or not she's right is another matter.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right, we'll be back with Keith Anthony in just a sec, and we'll get a top writing tip that may change the way you work forever in 2 ticks. Stay there. Now, it's been a while, so I need to do some admin just for a little bit. Let me remind you of all the ways that you can get in touch with the show. If you're enjoying it, if you want to let other people know, if you just want to say hey, really, we're on Twitter. We're at Writers Pod over there, which is the best place to get in touch if you want a nice quick reply. Also over on Instagram, you can get daily motivational posts to help out with your work on there. You can get quotes, you can get clips from the show. We are at Writer's Routine over on Instagram, and you can always find the show. You can get all the old episodes, and you can get every single way to listen to us over on our website, writersroutine.com. Now, on every episode of Writer's Routine, we like to try and hear from more than one author. So we invite a writer that we've had on telling us about their working day back, and we get them to give like a little mini routine that helps them get their work done. And they share with you a tip that may help the way that we work forever. That's the idea. This week, we've got Anthony Cropper on. He co-wrote The Accidental Memoir. It's a creative writing workbook. It's full of prompts to help you get your own memoir down on paper. And today, Anthony, he's back with a tip to help you shape your story.
Hello, my name's Anthony Cropper, and my tip is to think about structure. If you're trying to work on a novel, look at Kurt Vonnegut's advice on YouTube on the shape of stories, on story structure. It's only about 2 minutes long, but it'll probably teach you more in 2 minutes than I could teach you in about 6 months. It's a fantastic clip, and he talks through a number of stories, and he just talks about where you start from, the character in terms of positive or negative, where they go to, you know, the good things that happen in the story and the negative things that happen in the story as well. So have a look at that. It's about thinking about the shapes of the story. One thing, when I was working on my first novel, I was given some advice from Julia Darling, who wrote Crocodile Soup, and she said, what shape is a story? What is it, an X? Is it an S? Is it a W? Is it an M? And for me, that was a revelation. I thought, I didn't think about shapes, and it gave me a structure to work with of thinking, where does a character start? Oh, he starts down here. Then what's a point that I'm aiming for with my writing? And then what's another low point, and what's another high point? And does it finish on a low or a high? So those different structures really helped me, the shapes of stories.
Thank you so much to Anthony Cropper for that tip, and also to Eve Mackis as well. They were both on the show a couple of months ago telling us how they wrote their book, The Accidental Memoir, how they got it down in 3-hour chunks while the car parking was still valid over the course of like 6 months. So you can listen to more of that, found out how they worked on it, by downloading the last Writer's Routine episode wherever you normally get your shows from. And you can also find us over at writersroutine.com. Right, let's get back to the meat of the show then. The second half of our chat with Keith Anthony, talking about his debut novel, Times and Places. It's a story of shimmering tension and truths that come to light aboard a cruise ship. Now, in this part, we chat about making his work accessible, how he feels now, what he's learnt as he moves on to start work on a second story, and we pick things up talking about structure, why he split his novel into two parts, and what that meant for his planning.
There were the two separate tracks, really. So there was the cruise ship. So it was, looking at that, it was where it calls, what the timelines are for where it calls. So there was a bit of research involved in that. The places it calls at. So examining the places and how I was going to describe those. Most importantly, what happens to Fergus on the ship during that time. So there was some planning of that. And then the alternating chapters, it was what I've done is there are probably three or four separate strands within the alternating chapters, each with probably two chapters of their own. So I've written one chapter about perhaps the detective, and then maybe seven chapters later or eight chapters later, there's another chapter about the detective. And so it does jump around. It's got an index in there, which I hope acts as a little bit of a map as well. But it's also an accessible read, so I didn't want to make it difficult to follow. The tracts relate to each other, so I think... I hope it's not too complicated for the reader to read through.
You mentioned there how we might see two separate parts of the same story split up by seven chapters.
Yeah.
Did you write the story linearly?
Yes, I did, but I thought about that consciously. So I knew what I wanted to do in terms of, okay, I'll have a chapter where Justine meets up with Jones, her boyfriend, and they meet up actually in Slovenia, which is a place I really, really like. They're both on holiday and they happen to actually literally bump into each other there. And then I thought, okay, that's kind of a holiday romance. What happens when they get back? And so when they got back, that was the subsequent chapter, a few chapters, perhaps half a dozen chapters later. They meet back home. Have things changed? Does the relationship go forward? Have they actually got anything in common? And I was able to explore that. So it's each of these stories is linear, but there are separate stories, each with strands which go into the other stories. So I hope that that keeps it knitted together.
When you were writing it, does that mean that we wouldn't have found the story in any place other than on a Word document and in your mind? Did you have your writing room littered with sheets of paper? How did that work?
So I had littered with paper is an exaggeration. And what I certainly didn't have was some really complicated wall chart with, complicated plot lines where things interact, etc. But I did have a broad plan, which so I knew where the book was going. I knew what should be happening roughly in each chapter. I knew I was going to do a chapter on the detective here and then here.
Did that exist physically, this broad plan?
Yeah, that existed, but you wouldn't be particularly impressed if you saw it. It was literally just, you know, a few pieces of paper. For me, and I think writers are all different, but for me, I knew that if I tried to sit down and to do a really, really complicated plan, that would do two things. One, I'd probably dry up because I just wanted to start writing. So I'd probably dry up and it would actually stunt my creative process. And secondly, I'd get really, really bored doing that. So I'd probably never start in the first place. So I tried to think out broadly, this is what I want to do. I'm going to split it into these two separate strands, and one of those strands actually has slightly different elements within it. And I worked up a plan like that. I knew broadly what I wanted to happen, and then I just started writing and kept going until I'd completed my first draft. And after I'd finished my first draft, then you can go back and you can tweak all sorts of things. You can add stuff earlier on the basis of you now know what happens later. And create some links like that. So I think I was a fairly informal sort of writer rather than a planner.
You mentioned accessibility earlier.
Yeah.
Consciously making your book accessible to any forms of reader. It probably takes the mould of a story in the literary fiction genre.
Yeah.
Which can be quite heavy going. It can be quite weighty. It can be quite daunting.
Yeah.
How did you consciously make it accessible? What are you doing with language, with your plot, that's going to make it inviting for anyone?
Well, that's a really good question. So I think it is a very much a style question. I think I have quite an informal style, and I've tried to have quite an informal style. So it's not heavy, turgid language. It's very easygoing, almost as you speak type language. I guess I have occasionally tried to be a little bit poetic in there, and there is even a poem in there or a song in there as well. It's trying to be thought-provoking. It's trying to be sensitive. It's trying to explore emotions. I'm trying to get that pathos. I think I referred to pathos earlier. So here's, you know, here's something that happens that reminds Fergus of his daughter. So he meets, for example, there's a dancer on board the ship. She looks like his daughter used to look his daughter was a dancer, and it brings back all sorts of memories. So it's having that sort of pathos. There's a time when Jones, who's Justine's boyfriend, well, at the start of the book, Justine is travelling into London and she posts a package in a postbox and she dies that day. And then later on in the book, Jones receives that package and it's 3 days after she's died. And I'm trying to create some pathos there with what she writes on that package and what she writes to him. So it's trying to explore those sensitivities, those human emotions, but without getting too heavy and certainly without getting pretentious or, you know, too sophisticated about it. The edit was much tougher, much tougher, because maybe because of the style I'd adopted in writing it and getting it all down, you know, I sort of, you put that final full stop in place and you think, yeah, I've written a book.
The end,
and everyone's going to think it's brilliant. Then you start showing it to people. And in fact, before I even showed it to people, I then started going through it and you think, actually, that's not quite as good as I thought it was. And that's not quite as good as I thought it was. And so you then start that polishing process. And so I probably did, you know, 3 or 4 of those by myself before I started showing it to people. And then, of course, you get their feedback, and some of which is good. Of course, you show it to friends, they're all going to say something nice, but you don't want people just to say, brilliant, you know. You want people to come back with some thoughts, and I had some people who did do that, fortunately.
Do you remember any of the thoughts that they came back to you with that helped you out?
Yeah, so I mean, some sort of technical stuff and some content stuff. So technically, there's probably some sentences, my style was probably, the sentences were a little bit too long, so I started to break it down a little bit, make it a bit more accessible. We were talking about accessibility earlier. I wanted it to be more accessible. Then there were some things which people perhaps didn't think worked. There were some things that people thought, there was 1 or 2 chapters that people thought were a little bit long. And I'd put, there was one chapter in particular, which was the second chapter put in Slovenia, where I'd written about something which was really quite important to me and poignant to me and meant a lot to me, but it didn't really add that much to the story, if I'm honest. And, you know, that feedback came back, and it was a long chapter. Keith, you need to shorten that chapter a bit. You know, what are you going on about here? And that was really tough, because that meant a lot to me, that bit. To take it out was difficult. But I also knew that they were right, and so I did.
Did you always listen to criticism?
I always listen. But I think as a writer, you know, you're going to have people saying different things to you. You're going to have people saying, oh, that was really good, and that was actually, no, someone else is thinking that doesn't work. So you'll go crazy if you try to, you know, do what everyone says. And you shouldn't be doing what everyone says. It's your book, but you have to bear in mind, you're wanting people to read your book. So if you get people to read it and they come back with comments, you know, you have to be open to listening to that, not go into denial. You haven't understood it. No, you're wrong. You know, I can't believe you didn't understand it. No, they're a reader. You know, they found something difficult or didn't get something. You need to take note of that. At the same time, someone says, oh, that sentence doesn't work. They just blindly sort of take it out. You think, are they right? Maybe they are, maybe they're not, and you have a bit of a think about it. So I was always open to what they said, but ultimately I was like the person who made the decision.
You've said when you're in your house and you've got your writing room,
yeah,
and you've always earmarked that as the place that one day you will sit down to write.
Yeah,
well, you've done it.
Yeah,
and you've published your first book.
Yeah,
being honest, is it what you wanted it to be years and years and years and years before you ever went on the cruise?
I guess, is it exactly what I wanted it to be? Probably not, no, because the process of writing, and I suspect especially the process of writing your first book, is a phenomenal learning experience. So it's not exactly what I want, but I think it would have been wildly over-optimistic to think it was ever going to quite be that. I would say it's 90% there. I'm telling a poignant story. I think it's generally well written. I think it is accessible, which I wanted. I think it has got humour, so it's not heavy. It has got that pathos. It has got elements of gothic horror in it. So it's got all those elements that I wanted. It's poignant. It does that thing which is actually really quite complicated, and which I was talking about, I think Jonathan Coe did in What a Carve Up, which really impressed me with that book, which is to have all these different strands and for them all to come together neatly. There's things in my story which, for example, I had someone read it and they said, that's totally unbelievable. You know, you've gone too far with that. But I left that in because actually there is a logical explanation for it at the end and it all comes together really, really neatly. And they agreed after they read it. They agreed. And so it does do that sort of complicated different strands all coming together neatly. It's poignant. It's spiritual with a small S. And those are the things that I wanted.
Said it's a learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
When you sit down to write your second, maybe you're doing that right now. What are the big takeaways from getting the first one plotted, planned and published?
I think in terms of the writing, I would take note now because they were right of the feedback that I got about some of my sentences being too long. So I think I'd probably keep some of that structure a little bit simpler in terms of, you know, technically how I'm writing. I think that would be a big thing. I actually think that's probably the key lesson I've got is to keep it simple, which is actually what I was wanting to do, but somehow I went down a slightly different track at times. That I think is the key learning. Would I do the planning differently? I think I probably will plan a little bit more this time, because this, your first novel, you're kind of gushing out everything that for the last however, you know, decades you've been thinking about. I think for the next novel, and I have got ideas in my head which I'm brooding about at the moment, I think I probably will do a little bit more planning as well. But I don't regret not having done it with this, because it's panned out pretty much as I wanted.
That is it then. Thank you so much to Keith Anthony for coming on the show. We've got links to his book, so you can pick it up for yourself. Times and Places, it's called. Find out more over at writersroutine.com. And whilst you're there, remember that is a brilliant place for you to get in touch with the show. If you've got any writing tips of your own that you want shared, if you're an author yourself and you want to chat about how you worked on your story, or maybe you've just got a few writers that you'd like to hear from and you want me to start sending emails to, find us on the website writersroutine.com. Now, if you've enjoyed the episode, I'd love for you to tell someone else about it. The best place that you can do that is to leave us a review. 5 stars if you can. It really helps out with the chart over on the iTunes podcast store. And while you're there, make sure you subscribe so we automatically download to your feed each week or so. We've got some huge authors on the show soon, fingers crossed, including like Ian Rankin, Cecilia Ahern. If everything falls into place, they should be good to go. Now, I'm not exactly sure when we will be back with new authors. Irons are still in the fire, but I'm trying not to be away for too long, like a whole summer this time, and I'll keep you across it online. So make sure you follow us on all the socials that you can. Twitter, Writers Pod, Instagram, Writers Routine. And thank you so much for listening. I'll see you soon. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.